Welcome to Hub Headlines. Today's program features the best commentary and analysis published in the Hub for April 17th. Up first is Sean Spear, writing on how the Liberals' big government budget ups the spending, ups the taxes, and drops the pretenses.
Yesterday's federal budget confirms the Trudeau government's ongoing fiscal trajectory of higher program spending, more deficits and debt, and ultimately bigger government. A key difference from recent years, however, is that it also sets out significant new tax increases, including a higher capital gains tax rate, that begin to raise revenues to match the government's higher levels of spending. This should be understood as a possible step towards a permanently larger government. Let's start with a short history. When the Trudeau government was first elected in 2015, federal program spending was roughly $250 billion, or about 12.5% of GDP, per year. Although the incoming government intended to increase spending on the margins based on modest, short-term deficits, its overarching fiscal policy message was mostly one of continuity with its predecessor. In fact, the 2015 Liberal Party platform lamented the Harper legacy of chronic deficits and promised to restore fiscal prudence. Instead, the government's first budget increased program spending by 6%, and it never looked back. Program spending was up by 36% over just 5 years, even before the pandemic hit. The government as a share of GDP gradually began to grow. This trend of higher spending and bigger government has continued in the post-pandemic years and is reaffirmed in the new budget. This year's projected program spending is now nearly double the level that it was 10 years ago in the Harper government's final year in office. It's projected to hit more than $544 billion by 2028 to 2029. Program spending as a share of GDP is now roughly 3 percentage points higher than it was when the Trudeau government was first elected, and the highest it's been in 30 years. Recap: the Trudeau government came to office understating its plans to grow program spending and the size of government itself. It has subsequently gone about systematically increasing both, mostly using deficit financing. Revenue as a share of GDP, particularly if one backs out the federal carbon tax, which is supposed to be revenue neutral, has experienced minimal change. Two recent developments, however, have seemingly shifted the Trudeau government's deficit finance plan to grow the size of the federal government. The first is the increase in its borrowing costs. In a higher interest rate world, it's simply more expensive to increase the size of government without taxpayers knowing it. It's notable, for instance, that annual public debt charges have now more than doubled since the government took office. The second is that the government and its proponents have become more straightforward about the case for bigger government. Perhaps liberated by their poor election prospects, they've abandoned old euphemistic arguments in favor of the decidedly progressive case that government got too small following the global financial crisis, and the Trudeau government's legacy is to essentially right-size it. The budget's tax increases, including nearly $20 billion over 5 years from the capital gains tax hike alone, are a manifestation of this new political economy reality. They should be understood as a first, but hardly last, step to backfill Ottawa's large-scale spending growth over the past near decade. It reflects the inverse of the common notion that tax-cutting conservatives, particularly in the U.S., pursued a fiscal policy strategy to starve the beast by cutting taxes to such a level that there eventually becomes no choice but to cut the size of government to bring it in line with tax revenues. The Trudeau government has effectively sought the opposite strategy, what one might call gorge the beast. It has driven up government spending so high using deficit financing that it's now saying we need to raise taxes in order to pay for its higher public expenditures. One consequence is that it potentially sets up a starker set of political choices than we've had in the recent past. Cheap borrowing costs had enabled the Trudeau government to both promise more spending and low taxes. Canadians were effectively able to get big government on the cheap. Rising borrowing costs and the government's own progressivism have begun to bring an end to that fiscal bargain. Taxes will eventually have to increase more broadly to sustain the Trudeau government's seemingly inexorable spending ambitions. Canadians will ultimately have to decide if it's worth it. It ought to create a clear choice in the next election. Did the government indeed get too small, and are Canadians prepared to pay for it to be bigger?
That was a commentary by Sean Spear. He is the Hub's editor at large. You can find the full text of his article on our website, thehub.ca. Our second essay is by Casey Babb, writing on how Iran's intentions have been known for decades, questioning, why haven't we listened?
For the first time ever, Tehran has attacked Israel from Iranian soil, firing hundreds of projectiles across the skies of the Middle East into Israeli airspace, including dozens of ballistic missiles and hundreds of unmanned kamikaze drones. Tehran's genocidal regime has pushed the region to the brink of all-out war. Yet, despite the fact Iran has repeatedly issued threats of wiping Israel off the map, many analysts, scholars, and politicians seem taken aback by Iran's brazen attack. This feigned surprise isn't fooling anyone. The West's willfully blind approach to Iran not only enabled this assault on Israel, it also led to the barbaric terrorist attacks in Israel on October 7th. If these atrocities and belligerent acts of aggression aren't enough to wake us up to the dangers of Iran, then what will? For over 40 years, Iran has spent every ounce of its social, political, economic, and military capital on exporting its radical ideology, harvesting terrorism, and obtaining the nuclear bomb, all with two primary objectives in mind: eroding American influence and destroying Israel. Since at least the 1960s, when Iran's first supreme leader Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini began nudging his country towards an obsession with anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, and anti-American thinking, Iran's ruling elite has sought to mobilize regional support around the idea of Tehran as a transformative force committed to Muslim liberation across the globe. As one analyst wrote in 2019, Khomeini's revolution was supposed to span the Muslim world. He viewed all Muslims in the Middle East as subjugated masses to be liberated. Arab monarchs and secular leaders were to be displaced by Islamist parties that shared his view that religion should inform politics. Underpinning this vision, of course, was, and is Iran's view that the Islamic world's primary oppressors and enemies are America and Israel. Or, as Khomeini described them, Big Satan and Little Satan. This way of thinking, which has informed Iranian decision-making since Khomeini took control of Iran in 1979, has not only endured, it has accelerated as Tehran has gradually moved from talking tough to taking lives. From funding Islamic terrorist organizations such as Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, to pushing towards nuclear breakout, Iran has become one of the most deadly and destabilizing regimes in the world. In fact, without Iranian weapons, financial support, training, and aggressive propaganda campaigns, everything from the Second Lebanon War to October 7th would have never happened. Unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, Western nations have, by and large, turned a blind eye to Iran's deadly fundamentalist ideology and the regime's appalling activities. Activities that have led to the loss of untold thousands of lives throughout the Middle East and beyond. This is not to suggest our collective approach to Iran, or lack thereof, is motivated by nefarious intentions. Rather, it is likely due to a combination of factors, including existing beliefs that Israel is more powerful than it really is, a deep-seated view, conscious or unconscious, that Jerusalem is to blame for regional hostilities, and an issue that has plagued Western decision-makers for ages, ignoring or belittling what our enemies tell us. From Adolf Hitler's anti-Semitic diatribes, which he issued for years before the Holocaust, to Osama bin Laden's jihadi declaration against America half a decade before 9/11, to Putin's rhetoric on Ukraine, our adversaries tell us time and time again what they plan to do, and then they do it. Nearly 20 years ago, former Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said the occupying regime of Jerusalem must be disappeared from the page of time. Yet, in the time since, virtually no attempts have been made to curb Iranian aggression towards Israel. Ultimately, it would appear that most in the West either aren't listening to Iran or they aren't taking Tehran's words seriously. In the same way, we would never suggest Russia is Ukraine's problem to address alone. We cannot expect Israel to confront and contain Iranian acts of war in isolation. Further, the fact Israel, alongside many of its allies, was able to prevent the majority of Iran's missiles from raining down on its citizens does not diminish the severity of what has happened. All told, Iran's attack on Israel is not simply an attack on the Jewish state. At its core, it is an attack on liberalism, on democracy, and on all that we stand for. The Iranian regime has made their intentions known for virtually half a century. If we don't start listening now, if we abandon Israel, we will pay a very dear price later.
That was a commentary by Casey Babb. He is a senior fellow with the McDonald Laurier Institute in Ottawa, an international fellow with the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv, and an associate fellow with the Royal United Services Institute in London, England. That's it for today's edition of Hub Headlines. We hope you enjoyed the program. To receive all our best commentary and analysis each morning by email, subscribe to The Hub for as little as 25 cents a day. You can do that right now at thehub.ca. Hub Headlines is produced by Alicia Rao. Thanks for listening.